This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on today's show, celebrating the craft and history of maple syrup production in Ohio. First up, environmental factors play a role in a woman's likelihood of developing breast cancer. The University of Cincinnati Center for Environmental Genetics and the Breast Cancer Registry of Greater Cincinnati are hosting an event on Saturday called Looking Upstream for Better Breast Health. Joining us for a preview of the event and to explain how environmental factors affect breast cancer are Deputy Director of the UC Center for Environmental Genetics, Program Leader of the Cincinnati Cancer Center, and UC Epidemiology Professor Dr. Susan Penny, and UC Epidemiology Clinical Research Coordinator Victoria Strawn. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Susan and Victoria, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, Mark, thank you so much for having us today.
Susan, what exactly and how much of a role does the environment play in the likelihood of developing breast cancer?
Well, there certainly are environmental factors that are related to breast cancer. One of the first ones that was discovered was actually radiation exposure. With the atomic bombs in Japan, researchers soon found out afterwards that women had higher rates of breast cancer, especially those who were young, of pubertal age, when they were exposed to the radiation. That type of radiation exposure was a one-time high level of radiation exposure. Now, breast cancer survivors then often ask about their radiation therapy. Should they be concerned about that? And that type of exposure is actually of lower levels of radiation exposure. And it's a situation where you have to think about the benefit of the treatment versus the risk. And clearly, the radiologists are very well aware of the risks and benefits and protect other parts of the body during radiation therapy. So, the therapy, the benefits of the therapy outweigh the risk. Another thing to think about is how does radiation increase the risk of breast cancer? Well, it tends to cause DNA damage. And then I've had questions for breast cancer survivors who have a family history of breast cancer, which gives them, which many times is related to some kind of genetic, some gene. And so they wonder if then they're at greater risk when they have radiation therapy. And so very recently, you mentioned the Breast Cancer Registry. A researcher has used data in the Breast Cancer Registry and has looked at this question and found that those with a family history of breast cancer have absolutely no chance or greater chance of recurrence after radiation therapy than those who have no family history of breast cancer. So, you know, there's a balance between risk and benefits, but radiation was the first environmental exposure.
And should people be concerned about diagnostic procedures that use radiation, CAT scan, x-rays, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. There are all different levels of radiation. CAT scans usually expose people to the most radiation compared to, for example, dental x-rays, where the radiation exposure is much, much less. One of the things we think about is CAT scans in children. And actually here at Cincinnati Children's Hospital, they were one of the first institutions to really look at this question and now require their physicians to consider how many CAT scans a child has had. Because often children who have a condition that requires one CAT scan might be a child where a second one might be done, but they consider, you know, again, the risks versus the benefits.
Victoria, how does environmental exposure compare to, say, lifestyle and genetics in determining how likely you'll be to develop breast cancer?
Well, you know, when I talk to people in the community about that question, not too long ago there was some information that came out with the health department along with the Center for Closing the Health Gap about, you know, where you live can determine here in Cincinnati, right in Cincinnati, your life expectancy. And there were a lot of things that they looked at, including environment. So when you start to look at that and how our relationship as humans interact with the environment, you know, sometimes there are things out there, and I believe Dr. Penny is going to go over a few other of those, I mean, things that we probably don't think about. And I was listening on my way over here, and someone was talking about lead. We were talking about, she's going to talk a little bit more about dust and things that are in dust and particles and things like that. So, you know, it is important for us to at least be aware of these things. And as we were discussing before we came on the air a little bit is, you know, there are some of these things we can't really do a whole lot about, but maybe we can once we know better, we do better. So that means we start to lessen, you know, or clean the dust a little bit more or begin to understand our environment and try to lessen that exposure a little bit.
Certainly. There are chemicals in our environment that actually perturb or disrupt our hormones, and they're known as endocrine disruptors. And if you're thinking of breast cancer, you're especially concerned about the chemicals that act like estrogen or increase the production of estrogen or a related hormone known as estrone. And those chemicals exist in our environment. There are some other chemicals that actually increase the levels of testosterone, and then there are other chemicals that decrease the levels of these hormones. My philosophy is whenever we're disturbing the normal hormone profile, that's probably not a good thing. So we want to try to avoid those things that have been shown in basic science studies. Those are studies in the laboratory or in humans to be endocrine disruptors. You know, and the effects of these things are more subtle than radiation, and many times they involve a pathway. And I can give you one example. For example, there are certain environmental chemicals that may tend to, they're called obesogens. They make people more obese. And we know that obesity around the time of menopause is a risk factor for breast cancer. There are other environmental chemicals that upregulate estrogen, and we are concerned that around the time of puberty, when young girls have breast tissue growth initially, that they will accelerate breast tissue growth or delay it. There are other chemicals that can delay it. So none of that is really good. And it's better to avoid those chemicals.
What are some of the other everyday exposures that people should be aware of?
Well, some specific places where you find environmental chemicals are in plastics, in flame retardants, and in personal care products like makeup and sunscreen, those kinds of things. So, for example, you know, one has to use some judgment. We don't tell people never to use plastics, but it's not a good idea to microwave in plastic. You want to microwave in glass or ceramics. A chemical that I've been studying more recently is known as oxybenzone or benzophenone, also known as BP3, and it's a chemical that's in sunscreen or anything that has an SPF. And it's actually found in lots of cosmetics now. Obviously, it's good to reduce the exposure of our skin to sunlight and prevent skin cancer. That's a good thing. On the other hand, these chemicals are readily absorbed by the skin. So, you know, again, it's a matter of judgment and deciding what the best thing to do. I can tell my own story. I have fair skin and have had some precancerous lesions on my skin. So naturally, I'm concerned about the use of sunscreen. And I do use sunscreen. But I tend to be judicious in using it. I put it on days I know I'm going to be exposed to the sun, including days when I know there's a lot of exposure through my car window. But I only put it on when I'm going to be exposed to the sun. And I actually have looked into products that don't contain BP3, sunscreen products that don't contain BP3. If you Google sunscreen without BP3, you'll probably come upon a website that gives you names of different products that have that are sunscreens without BP3. They use zinc oxide as a barrier to ultraviolet rays. So that's one thing you can do. Another thing, as I mentioned, the sunscreens have creeped into all of our cosmetics. So you can try to find things that don't contain sunscreen When I buy my cosmetics, I ask the at the counter, you know, why all these cosmetics have sunscreen in, why I don't have an option. Another thing to think about is lip balm. Lots of lip balms on the market now contain sunscreen. And in fact, you know, some of them even contain lots of sunscreen with an SPF of 45. Now, for those
of us, you have to ask the question, when do I really need SPF 45?
Right, absolutely. And you know, for those of us who use lip gloss or lip balm, you know at the end of the day it's gone. So where did it go? You probably ate it, which means that if you're using a lip balm with a high SPF, you're eating a lot of BP3.
So I guess one of the key things though you're bringing up is that you ask questions. You're asking
right.
questions about the products that you're using. And
anybody can ask questions.
So give me some more examples of questions that people should be asking.
Well, I mean, certainly if you use lip balm, which lots of people use, especially in dry weather, certainly look to see what the SPF rating is on it. And there definitely are lip balm products that have no sunscreen in them. So if you've been inside all winter and you're going to Florida for spring break, then you want to use a lip balm and find one that has a high SPF rating. But, you know, during December, January, February, you don't need any sunscreen in your lip balm. So those are some things you can do.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you too, Susan, you were talking about microwaving and not microwaving in plastic, which is something I think Victoria, a lot of people do this. So why is that a bad idea? What does that cause?
What happens is when you microwave, you know how your food gets warm. The reason your food gets warm is the microwaves energize molecules in the food and they, you know, move more. And that's what makes your food warm. Well, it does the same thing to the plastic. And when the plastic becomes energized, even when it stays firm and isn't melted, molecules of the plastics in the plastic container can move out into your food. So I use plastic containers all the time to pack items for my lunch or to pack leftovers, but I never microwave in them. So what can you do? Microwave.
That's right. That's the obvious question. Where do you go from there?
So microwave in glass or plastic or even paper plates. But you want to use the really inexpensive paper plates that don't have a plastic coating.
Yeah. Okay.
So in our research group, we have a microwave for using for lunch and such, and we have a big stack of very inexpensive paper plates. So those are things you can do. You can put paper towels over your food or invert a paper plate to heat it rather than using plastic wrap. So there are lots of options. I think people just need to become more educated, and we try to help with that through the Center for Environmental Genetics and our outreach program, and then also, you know, make choices that reduce their environmental exposures.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon, as we look at how environmental factors affect breast cancer, our Deputy Director of the UC Center for Environmental Genetics, Program Leader of the Cincinnati Cancer Center, and UC Epidemiology Professor Dr. Susan Penny, and UC Epidemiology Clinical Research Coordinator Victoria Strawn. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Susan, can you talk about the balancing act that people have to do here, balancing the risk of exposure? I mean, some people insist on using all natural cosmetics, deodorant and such, but how much exposure to typical market products, how much of that becomes a real problem?
I wish we knew more about that. You know, I would love to do a study someday where women use different cosmetic products, combinations of cosmetic products, and we could measure the exposure to certain chemicals in their urine. No one has done that yet, nor have I found the money to do that. But I think that, again, think about the source of the chemical. For example, I really pay much more attention to the use of lip gloss and lip balms, that kind of thing, because you're ingesting them. And also things like sunscreen that you put a lot of it on, that's just common sense. Try to reduce the amount of that that you use. I think that the Environmental Working Group has a wonderful website on fruits and vegetables because pesticides can be endocrine disruptors. And they publish every year the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. So the Dirty Dozen are the fruits and vegetables that have the least amount of pesticide burden. And the Clean 15 are the best. So I think it's a good idea. It changes a little bit every year to go and look at that. Just Google Environmental Working Group and Dirty Dozen, and you'll come up with that. There's also a website under the Environmental Working Group, a website for cosmetics. And that's another wonderful source of information and tells you, you can look by brand name. You can look up cosmetics and sunscreens, and it tells you what's in them. And it rates them for burden of environmental chemicals. I think we have to educate ourselves. We try to help people and give them resources. Some of that will happen at the event on Saturday. And then just make choices and just try to reduce your exposure to environmental chemicals as much as you can. But also, you know, they're all around. 97% of the U.S. population has BP3 in their system. So, you know, there's no way really to completely eliminate our exposure to environmental chemicals.
And Victoria, I'd have to think too that just because a product is labeled natural, it could still be a cancer-causing product.
Yeah, they still could contain some, you know, carcinogens or what we call parabens. I mean, a lot of people now see products that say paraben-free, but they don't really know what that is. And I'm going to let Dr. Penny talk a little bit more about that. But the main thing is I think people are more concerned with carcinogens, but we also have to be aware of what Dr. Penny just said when you're talking about endocrine disruptors, right? Because men have hormones, women have hormones. As you're growing up, you need hormones that helps you grow, it helps you develop. But when you have products that you're being exposed to where those hormones are being disrupted in any kind of way can cause other types of problems in your health. And that's what we look at, you know, in a lot of these products.
Susan, parabens, what's the story with that?
Parabens are chemicals that are in many products that prevent bacteria from growing in the product. So it's so hand sanitizers contain parabens. There are other substances. Again, you know, maybe just hand washing frequently. If you can wash your hands in soap and water, that's an alternative to using a hand sanitizer rather than always using a hand sanitizer. Again, just trying to think about it and reduce your risk. Something people may not think about, actually flame retardants are endocrine disruptors and also are chemicals that are stain-resistant or water-resistant chemicals. And most of our furniture, including the seat I'm sitting on right here, probably is coated with that, you know, with those chemicals, probably are coated with those chemicals. Now,
This every day. You're not making me feel any better.
So you don't need to worry about that. You don't need to worry about sitting on those pieces of furniture. Nothing's going to happen to you. But as furniture becomes old, you know, those things kind of flake off from the coating and get into your house dust. We know that, so that's especially something that's important for small children. We know that around the time of fetal development in the womb, and also when children are very small, is a time when they're very susceptible to environmental chemicals, which actually may set them up for endocrine disruption later in life. So one of the things that you can do is, you know, if you have a small child around, especially someone who's crawling on the floor, try to reduce the dust as much as possible. And another thing that's very important, we know that small children eat with their hands, right? They like finger foods and they eat with their hands. So be very aware that you should wash their hands before they eat. And lots of times, you know, a child's hungry, they're cranky. It's hard to stop and actually wash their hands, but that will reduce their exposure.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation, and let's talk with Beth in Cleves. Hi, Beth.
Hi, good afternoon. I was listening to the conversation, and she stated that chemicals that can affect or disrupt hormone levels can be harmful. And I was just wondering, how do birth control pills contribute to possibly breast cancer? Because their function is to disrupt your natural hormone levels. So how does that work?
Great question, and I'm glad you called in and asked it. So actually, women who use oral contraceptives for birth control, that actually reduces their risk of breast cancer. And the way it does it is it decreases the amount of estrogen exposure to breast tissue. So while you're on birth control, you have changed the hormone profile, but it seems that based on some very large studies, in doing that, you reduce the exposure of the breast to estrogen and therefore in later life reduce your risk of breast cancer. So anything that reduces the exposure of the breast to estrogen does reduce your risk. Also, lactating and nursing children, that reduces your risk. If you wait, never having had children or waiting till you're older to have children are two things that increase your risk because there are more years or more time generally that your breast tissue is exposed to estrogens.
What about women who undergo hormone replacement therapy, though?
So, very interestingly, I can't remember how many years ago, but not too long ago, we discovered that hormone replacement therapy, use of that was actually a risk, increases risk of breast cancer. And when medical practices changed to decrease the amount of prescriptions for hormone replacement therapy, breast cancer rates came down. Now, whether all of that was due to the change in medical practice is of a big question. But again, it's a risk-benefit. I mean, some people are miserable around the time of menopause, and hormone replacement therapy help really, truly, you know, better their health. So it's important. But you know, there are many women who choose to not use them or their symptoms of menopause are not great enough that they don't need hormone replacement therapy. So, again, less use of hormone replacement therapy.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Evelyn in Blue Ash. Hi, Evelyn.
Hello. Yes, we were talking about the use of plastic in microwave ovens. And I usually use glass Corningware to cook in the microwave. I use the microwave a lot to cook with. But there are certain, like egg, the little plastic egg cooker, you just break an egg into this little plastic container and cover it with a plastic cover. I use that in the morning. And also I have a rectangular plastic box called Fasta Pasta, which is a microwave pasta cooker. You add the pasta and the water. You don't have to bring a big pot of water to the boil. But it is plastic, and I wonder whether some plastics are well designed enough to use in the microwave.
Well, thanks for calling in with that question. First thing, very good that you use Corningware or any type of glass container to microwave in. That's a good choice. I am not familiar with either of the products you mentioned, so I really can't tell you what kind of exposure you're getting from microwaving in them. But I would say, especially with the product you use to cook eggs, the container, can you cover that with a paper towel? Can you try that rather than plastic wrap? That might help to reduce your exposure to plastics. And if you want to call us with the names of those products, we'll do a little research for you. You can call me at 558-0684 or Victoria at 558-0559.
Okay. And Victoria, I want to talk about the breast cancer registry and what that is specifically. And we have Michelle Weiner, who's joining us on the line as well, who's involved with the registry. So, Michelle, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, Michelle.
Thanks for joining us. Now, I'd like you and Victoria to tell us about the breast cancer registry, what the purpose of this is.
The registry was a registry of people who are diagnosed with breast cancer in Cincinnati. And the home of the registry is actually at the Environmental Health Department. So none of us know who's on the registry, but it allows researchers to then go out and access our data, our names, for whatever research projects they may be looking into. So they're really looking for the causes of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And the program honors the contribution of the breast cancer registry to the research, which is why I actually joined the registry. I felt like I want to be part of research out there. Someone look at, you know, what's going on in my environment, and especially now that we know all these environmental factors, it's quite interesting.
I'm going to add to that. The registry started in 2004, and right now we have over 6,200 that are in it right now. It is any person's male or female, and we do have a couple of males or a few males that are in our database as well. So what we do is we send out questionnaires, and we do have partners that we work with in the field to help distribute these questionnaires and find people who have had a breast cancer diagnosis. And so the questionnaire that we send out, it does contain some information where we're able to get kind of a snapshot of the lifestyle of that person, as well as their treatment, how they found their breast cancer. Was it through a self-examination, or was it through a mammogram? They also asked maybe a little bit about your treatment, what kind of treatment, and also a little bit about your lifestyle as well in your history, whether, you know, some people exercise, just kind of a little snapshot of that. So we go out and we collect that information. That way, if we have a researcher who wants to look into some of these exposures that we talked about, they could literally come and access it. Now, there's a whole process. It's not just open where a researcher can write up something and come to us and say, here, I want to access your database. There is a whole process they have to go through. And I'll let Dr. Penny explain a little bit more of that process. But they do have a way of coming to us. We literally could say, if they say we want to look for women who are 25 years old, no history in their family at all, and came down with breast cancer, we could go in the database and just isolate those few individuals. Okay. And so that it makes it unique. But it's also, we have built in our database a way to protect the names of our people, to keep those names confidential.
So it's confidential. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's absolutely confidential. But, you know, what's different for ours is that most of what people hear about breast cancer and cancer treatment, a lot of times is surrounding medication and treatment. Ours is looking for causes. So we're not into, you know, we're hopefully we find causes, then it leads to better treatment. But we stick with causes. So we're out here in the world, in the universe, looking for all those things that we believe could affect breast cancer. But maybe Dr. Penny could talk a little bit about, you know, how to go about accessing it, because it's not that easy where you just come in and ask, can I have some of that data, you know?
Sure. Well, I think with the amount of time we have here, if you're interested in becoming part of the registry, again, the best way is to call us. The number is 513-558-0559. We have a website that has lots of information on it. We can send you a brochure. We have an enrollment packet and a consent form if you're interested. But I do want to reiterate how confidential the registry is. We keep all the contact information. And if Dr. Smith, for example, comes to us and wants to do a study of people who were diagnosed at a very young age and have no family history, we do find those people in the registry, as Victoria described. And then we, meaning the people in the registry, myself and Victoria, send those people a letter asking them if they would be interested in participating in Dr. Smith's study. And only if they sign a paper that says yes, do we then pass on their name and contact information to Dr. Smith. So we never, ever give out our contact information unless people first give us the permission to do that.
Michelle, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. And Susan, tell us about the event that's coming up on Saturday. This is Looking Upstream for Better Breast Health.
Great. Yes, we have a terrific event coming up on Saturday where we have speakers. We have an opportunity for breast cancer survivors and their family members to converse with each other and converse with our experts. The first talk will be on how integrative medicine can be part of treatment for people with a breast cancer diagnosis. The second talk will be by Jennifer Hopper, who is a licensed genetic counselor, and she's going to talk about considerations about whether family members of breast cancer survivors should have genetic testing. The third talk is going to be Maria Meyer from the Cincinnati Waterworks, and she's going to tell us how they remove environmental chemicals from water. We have some of the best water in the United States because we have a great water treatment system. But she's going to tell about how those chemicals are removed, and including pharmaceuticals like hormone replacement therapy, which eventually does get into our drinking water, into the Ohio River, and how they can be removed. There's a $25 fee, which really goes to food. The event is being held at the Redding campus of UC. It's very easy to access, free parking on a flat lot right in front of the building. You walk right in, and our event space is right there.
And there's a link to more information at our website,
great,
WVXU.org.
Thank you.
So, Susan and Victoria, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deputy Director of the UC Center for Environmental Genetics, Program Leader of the Cincinnati Cancer Center, and UC Epidemiology Professor Dr. Susan Penny, and UC Epidemiology Clinical Research Coordinator Victoria Strawn.